Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome, everybody, to the Dragon's Lair on Renegade Broadcasting, the best source for factual information on the planet. So, tonight's show, I hope everybody has read the description because I'm not going to sit here and go through it. But, again, Christians are clearly retarded. And I'm not just going to pick on just them. I'm going to pick on some others as well. So if you looked in the notes and saw that list, well, there was one I left out, and that's Jehovah Witnesses. I'm going to cover them too. Hopefully you're not hearing my dog bark in the background, but if you are, I'll check in the chat a little bit later and see if people can hear it. He's, some reason, he's not happy. He's on the back porch tonight, and I may have to wind up letting him in, but he's being a pest for whatever reason. So anyway, this show is probably going to go about 3 hours. Blog Talk cuts off at 3 hours by default, no matter what. And so you'll have to catch it in the archives in order to get the last hour for it. Now, I believe we have a live feed tonight, so I don't think my hour continues in that feed, but it will certainly sound better than listening to Blog Talk. For the record, today is May 5th, 2013 on our screwed up Christian calendar. And fuck all this celebration of Mexico's win against the French. They can celebrate it in Mexico, not here. The sun is at 15 degrees Taurus. Be sure and give a listen to all the other hosts here on Renegade. Until further notice, we have Kyle on Mondays, Dana on Tuesdays, Lou on Wednesdays, Mike on Thursdays, Siegfried on Fridays, the Roundtable on Saturdays, and me, of course, on Sundays. As usual, I will not monitor the chat. I'll glance there during music breaks, and I'm going to check to see if y'all can hear the dog barking, too. I'll be drinking and smoking where I'm sitting, so occasionally you'll get some pauses for needing to light a cigarette that goes out all the time. And the usual occasional silences for a call for some hacking. We have a chat at renegadebroadcasting.com. We have a chat at renegadebroadcasting.chitango.com. That same chat is over on alternativesocial.com. I also want to remind everybody about nationalprotectionism.com. Again, I have no personal website or blog as of yet. I'd probably not have a life if I did between doing these shows and other work and stuff I have going on. No calls tonight. If you want to get in touch with me, you can reach me at magus_18@geocities.com, magus_18@geocities.com. If you want to subscribe, just put subscribe in the subject, send me an email. Or if you just want to write me. I can't guarantee I can get to all of the emails. For those of you who have recently sent me a request to be on my list, I have not sent anything out, and that's why you have not gotten anything. You will be on there the next time that I do send something out. Now, also, too, there's been some questions that have been sent to me as well. And one of them has to do with Satan. Well, what I'd like for you to do is go listen to my show on Satanism, and that should answer your question. I will be discussing Satanism more in the future. In the meantime, I'm discussing Christianity. Okay? Now, some of you may think I've been on this recently. I've been doing this a long time. Okay? You know, I have my doubts about Christianity when I was in my early teens, and I had bought a book by Eric Von Daniken called Chariots of the Gods. And of course, I'm not saying that his philosophy is correct or not, but it sheds plenty of doubt. And so I've been doing this a long time. I've had a Yahoo group called Exposing Christianity for about 7-8 years now, and it's loaded full of links and files that clearly disproves this. Now, also too, in the future, I'm going to be doing a piece on the perversion of Buddhism by this Abrahamic crap as well, because there's nothing that has been untouched by this Abrahamic crap. Even modern spirituality When I say modern, it's really, I'm calling it that because it's not necessarily as it used to be, because it's been tampered with by this Abrahamic crap. Now, my thoughts, first let me read this. I saw something in the chat here the other day. I'm not going to say their name or which anonymous number it was, but it says, no, I'm a cowardly troll. Seriously, though, my name is such and such. I'm not going to say it. And I'm from Britain. I haven't got a problem with you guys, but come on, let's stop all this pointless infighting. All right, that's right. Let's proceed with what's holding us back, which is Christianity. That's just real fucking smart, okay? Now, you want to call it infighting, you call it what you want. Why? Because this is about facing and dealing with reality. Your judgment is proving to be way below par. Trusting you isn't possible, okay? You have this dogmatic morality that you believe in, and you're under the influence of Hebrew sorcery. Now, racial death is forever, and this is serious business. You want feel-good and fun and games, go join the other side. Because if you're a Christian, you're already halfway there now. You know, I don't care what else you may have to say about this, okay? But what if I'm in a foxhole with somebody, and say it's me and two other people, and one of them is a Christian, the other one isn't. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you're a liability. Your judgment cannot be trusted, okay? It's real simple, and that should not be hard to figure out. All right, now I'm going to play another song, and then I'm going to check in chat, see if y'all can hear my dog barking, and then we'll get back into the show here in just a second. We'll be right back. Okay, I'm back, and yes, I'm pissed off and mad about it, and that's a local band here from Texas called THC. That is an acronym for the Texas Hippie Coalition. Anyway, they're out of, they're located north of Dallas, and their studios are in Oklahoma. Anyway, I listened to some of the shows this week. I didn't catch all of them. Just did not have time. I did not catch the roundtable last night. I did hear Kyle's show, Mike's show, and Lou's show. I was able to find time to listen to Lou as a download. I wasn't able to do it while it was live. Some interesting shows this last week. And Mike's show was very interesting. Not that the rest weren't, but in relation to what I have to talk about, it is. I'd like to add a little bit to some of the things that he was discussing. Venus is considered to be Lucifer when it is in retrograde. When it is in direct, it really, I guess, isn't Lucifer because it's no longer the morning star. I mean, yeah, technically Lucifer is Venus, right? That's true. But when it's in retrograde, it is the morning star. And when it is not in retrograde, it is the evening star. Now, Venus, the orbit of Venus around the sun, when viewed from Earth, with all of the direct and retrograde cycles, will actually form a pentagram in the sky. If you were to sit there and track it over an eight-year period of time, you would actually be able to trace out a pentagram. And Lucifer also means phosphorus. Now, also, too, one more issue regarding Satan. Not only is he the adversary, and, of course, the word means truth, which means their adversary. He is also known as the false accuser, as he acts as an attorney. And so you really need to listen to my show on Satanism for that as well, because they see us, the Gentiles, as false accusers, and we are Satan. Now, there really never was this devil image in Christianity until, like Mike said in his show, and it was, they brought in Pan as this image of a devil, and really he's just an innocent bystander and has nothing to do with anything, but that was the image they chose to create. So anyway, also too, the Book of Revelation is completely stolen from the Book of Enoch, and I would suggest you look up the Book of Enoch for yourself, take a peek, see what all was stolen out of it, and it was... the information goes way back. However, I think they date the Book of Enoch maybe a couple of hundred years before the Common Era. Now, also San Francisco was mentioned. Now, San Francisco was where they've had the first meetings for the United Nations before it was moved to New York. In fact, most of the stuff was written there. So anyway, I thought I would bring that up as well. Now, another issue kind of related to what Mike was talking about, and there's a video out on YouTube, and I did not write the precise name down, but basically it says something along the lines that Christianity is self-imposed communism, and I'm sure if you did a search on YouTube for that phrase, you would find it, and it has some good information in it. So, now, also, too, there's this issue of the Mormon translations of the Old Testament, and the Mormon translations also use the word Lucifer. So that clearly shows that all of the Mormon translations to be totally a fraud. Now, also in Hebrew mythology, you have this this guy named Samael, and he is sort of this devilish figure, and I may read some things on him in the near future. And before I forget, There's if you read in the Book of Enoch, it actually discusses the birth of Noah there, and you ought to read the description that they give Noah in that book. It's well worth listening to. Well, anyway, this dog barking is driving me nuts. So at some point here, I'm going to take a break and let him in. But I'm going to go ahead and get going anyway and try to pretend he's not there for a little longer. And he's been spoiled, put it that way. So anyway, let me get to my notes here. I'm going to read some quotes. Now, some of the quotes that I was going to read tonight, unfortunately, whoever had that website failed to pay their bill for their domain name. And when I go to that webpage today, and I was on there yesterday, it is not there. So some of the quotes I was going to read tonight are just going to have to wait till the next show. And that's fine. And also, too, I'm going to discuss some issues with the Third Reich here tonight as well. In fact, some of these quotes I'm going to bring up. How much into the Third Reich? I'm not sure just yet. Let's just put put it this way. I'll get to it. If I don't get to it tonight, it'll be the next show. Anyway, the first quote I'm going to give you is from Adolf Hitler. The old beliefs will be brought back to honor again. The secret knowledge of nature, of the divine, the demonic. We will wash off the Christian veneer and bring out a religion peculiar to our race. And here's another one by Adolf Hitler. Judaism, Christianity, Bolshevism are all bound together. Comrades in agitation, born tools of decay. They possess the same talent to destroy the natural structure of society. Bolshevism is the historical and logical continuation of Christianity. It realizes on a technical level what Christianity has done on a metaphysical level. Now here's another one by Adolf Hitler. I will crush Christianity under my boot like a poisonous toad. This one is by Friedrich Nietzsche. The Christian resolve to find the world evil and ugly has made the world evil and ugly. And this one is by Pope Leo X. And by the way, most of these popes are a good portion of them, if not a majority, are Jews. All you got to do is look at their pictures. And this is by Pope Leo X. It has served us well, this myth of Christ. This one is from the next one here is from The Joy of Satan. A lie must always be enforced as opposed to the truth, which can stand on its own, because spiritual knowledge and occult power have been removed and kept in the hands of a chosen few. The unknowing populace has been helpless against it. The agenda here is to create a one-world slave state with a chosen few ruling at the top. The perpetrators, of course, blame Satan to create a necessary distraction while they use occult power to accomplish their ends. They have a history of stealing from and blaming their enemies for everything they really are and do, while always holding themselves in the highest esteem and innocence. Now, I've got a PDF file here on Hitler's view on Christianity. It's just real short. Won't take but a sec to get through it, and I can get it off my screen here, too. It's called Hitler's View on Christianity. One of the most pervasive and pernicious lies promulgated by the new atheist movement is that Hitler was a Christian and or that the Nazi movement itself was a Christian movement. Here are some more Hitler quotes refuting that ridiculous idea. One is either a German or a Christian. You cannot be both. Okay, that's one of them. That's in a photo with him on it, and that's why I went ahead and read it, because I'm going to have to scroll past it to get to the rest of the article. Hitler commented on Minister of Religion Kerrl's, K-E-R-R-L, effort to identify Nazism with positive Christianity, that it was the noblest of intentions, but I don't believe the thing's possible, and I see the obstacle in Christianity itself. As for the men close to me, he stated, who, like me, have escaped from the clutches of dogma. I have no reason to fear that the church will get its hands on them. We'll see to it that the church cannot spread abroad teachings that conflict with the interests of the state. We shall continue to preach the doctrine of National Socialism, and the young will no longer be taught anything but the truth. And it's some more quotes. In the long run, National Socialism and religion will no longer be able to exist together. The ideal situation will be to leave the religions to devour themselves without persecutions. Here's another. The dogma of Christianity gets worn away from the advances of science. Religion has to make more and more concessions. Gradually, the myths crumble. Now, Hitler made it clear that he was not interested in Aryanized Christianity or the Aryan Jesus myth promoted by Houston Stuart Chamberlain, von Liebenfels, and other certain party members. He says, quote, "You cannot make an Aryan out of Jesus. That's nonsense," he stated. And here's another quote. "The peasant will be told what the church has destroyed for him, the whole of the secret knowledge of nature, of the divine, the shapeless, the demonic. The peasant shall learn to hate the church on that basis. Gradually he will be taught what wiles the soul of the German people has been raped. We shall wash off the Christian veneer and bring out a religion peculiar to our race. And this is where we must begin, not in the big cities." Now, Bormann records Hitler as stating, "Christianity is a religion against natural law, a protest against nature." And I'm going to add here, just like communism. Okay, back to this quote. "Taken to its logical extreme, Christianity would mean the systematic cultivation of the human failure. Pure Christianity, the Christianity of the catacombs, is concerned with translating the Christian doctrine into fact. It leads quite simply to the annihilation of mankind. It is merely wholeheartedly Bolshevism under a tinsel of metaphysics. The heaviest blow that ever struck humanity was the coming of Christianity. Bolshevism is Christianity's illegitimate child. The deliberate lie in the matter of religion was introduced into the world by Christianity. Bolshevism practices a lie of the same nature when it claims to bring liberation to mankind. In the ancient world, the relations between men and gods were founded on an instinctive respect. It was a world enlightened by the idea of tolerance. Christianity was the first creed in the world to exterminate its adversaries in the name of love. Its keynote is intolerance." Okay. That ends that article. Now, back to my show notes here. Now, breaking free of Christianity is something that a lot of us, and I'm not going to, I shouldn't say us. Well, I don't know, it depends. it doesn't apply to me. So anyway, I'm going to go down a little list here of symptoms of Christianity. And yes, if you are a Christian, ultimately you are sick, okay? Okay, Christianity has fear, shame, control, and sin used as tools to manipulate you. Are you strong enough to acknowledge that you have been lied to? Are you willing to admit to yourself that you have been a victim and that you need help? Now, here are some of the stages of control in Christianity in one's life. Becoming more and more preoccupied with church or Bible study. Excessive church attendance or reading the Bible. Using the church, the Bible, or prayer to avoid life and or problems. Compulsively thinking about or quoting Scripture. Now, those items that I just mentioned, that is pretty much the loss of control stage. Now, other things include obsessive praying, proselytizing, witnessing, attending revivals and crusades on a frequent basis, excessive financial contributions, increasing dependence on the Lord, feelings of guilt if you miss a church function, refusal to think, doubt, or question Christian teachings or authority, inability to sensibly discuss religious issues, church attendance, prayer and religious activities begin to interfere with work or school. Feelings of powerlessness. Preaching that sex is evil or dirty. feelings of shame over nudity, your body, or the bodies of others, feelings of hatred or resentment towards others who have different beliefs, lengthy crusades, mission work, communes. Now, where have we heard that before? A kibbutz is what you call a commune in Israel. Now, over time, this thing called Christianity embeds itself in you, and you start manifesting physically an appearance of the lie that you buy into. Now, one can say, oh, that's a bunch of garbage. Yeah, well, okay. I think there's many things on YouTube you could look at that demonstrates quite clearly that Christians do actually project the physical image of the lie they buy into. They develop a smiley mask. This is an advanced stage of Christianity where feelings are denied. An artificial pasty smile is worn at all times. This is blatant evidence of extreme denial. Black and white simplistic thinking, strong feelings of low self-esteem, shame, self-hatred, blame. Okay? Excessive fasting or using food to feed other areas of your life that are seriously lacking. Proselytizing on the job, which of course equals job loss. Nobody cares to hear the shit. Progressive isolation, breakdown of relationships. Watching only religious programs on TV, excluding any non-religious programs. And again, as I've said before, they play both sides against the middle. And they control the television, what's on it, all the programming. And they sit there and attack Christianity, and yet they show it to you on television. And of course, the more they attack it, the more you run to it. Now, there's been several people here who have called in, and I'm going to reiterate here, I'm not taking any calls. Now, if you're just calling in to listen, that's fine, but I'm not taking any calls. Just want to let you know so you don't sit here on hold. Okay. Another symptom of Christianity, avoiding secular activities such as entertainment and education, an inability to take any personal credit for achievements, always giving credit to the Lord. Now, you see this all the time, these athletes. You know, they don't want to take credit for their own abilities. It was the Lord that gave it to them. Not taking any personal responsibility, relying on the Lord to control your entire life. Cries for help, mental, emotional, physical breakdown, hospitalization. One or more of these indicate there is a serious problem. In order to find out if something is good or evil, we must give it power. This is what happens with progressive Christianity. In the end, there is no more personal identity. The victim becomes a shell and something else takes over. If you have gotten this far, it is not too late to get out and stay out. All hoaxes, lies, and scams have one major theme in common. That is a lack of knowledge. Once one knows, one can no longer be deluded and lied to. Billions of dollars, mass murder, and above all, lies and fear have been used to keep us from our true creators and our spirituality. Those in control have profited from these fruits of their lies for centuries and wish to keep their power at the expense of human ignorance and misery. The biggest step is to overcome your fear and study and learn. Once you know, Christianity and its false teachings can no longer be a threat. Now, next item I've got here on my screen. Christians, you're fucking retarded. Every last one, without exception. You don't like it? Too fucking bad. Your acceptance of your beliefs means that you are being retarded and there's no way around it. Fuck you. You fucking retards. I'm sick of pretending your idiotic arguments are even remotely sensible. You're a fucking retard, eating retarded shit and calling it ice cream. The Christian generally believes that faith is a good idea, that believing things for no reason, just because, is a good idea. The Christian generally believes that being more certain of their beliefs than the evidence warrants is somehow a virtue. The Christian generally is trained to believe that everyone uses faith, and that to point out that others, and that to point out that to others use faith somehow justifies their own use of faith. Retards. I got a cough. The Christian generally believes that an appeal to consequences is a valid way of making an argument. The Christian typically believes that if it can be shown, or more commonly, if it can be made to appear that it is shown, that belief in Christianity leads to some benefit, or that lack of belief leads to some undesirable consequence, that this justifies belief. Well, this is fucking retarded. If you can't figure out why, it's because you're retarded. Hence, do a browser search for appeal to consequences and see what it says. You sick fucking retards. Christians generally believe that Jesus was God after he magically impregnated a virgin and then emerged from her vagina 9 months later, disappeared for 30 years, then turned up as a Messiah. The evidence for this, a book which says so. What? Nothing more? No, that's it. Just a book. Are you fucking kidding me? Only a book? Nope. Not kidding. They're that fucking retarded. I will put it another way. The belief that some cosmic Jewish zombie who was his own father can make you live forever if you symbolically eat his flesh, drink his blood, and telepathically tell him that you accept him as your master so he can remove all evil force from your soul that is present in all of humanity, because a woman made out of a rib taken from a man was convinced by a talking snake to eat from a magical tree. Well, that just makes all the sense in the world now, doesn't it? Now try this one on for size. So you're saying that your God created man and woman and then tempted them with knowledge of good and evil, knowing they would accept that knowledge, then label it as sin for having done so when they didn't even know what good and evil were in the first place. So that God could then impregnate a woman with himself, so he could then be born as a God human in order to kill himself as a sacrifice in order to save you from the original sin that he condemned you to in the first place. That has got to be one of the most ridiculous fucking stories I've ever heard. Christians often accept the Lord, liar, or lunatic argument as convincing. Gee, David Koresh was either Lord, liar, or lunatic. I'm going to say lunatic. Jesus was either Lord, liar, or lunatic. I'm going to say lunatic. People who don't think Jesus was a lunatic don't know much about lunatics. There's a word for such people. Retards. The story of Christianity is just plain stupid. If you believe it, you're a retard. Period. You have no arguments for your position, which are not retarded. If there were non-retarded arguments for Christianity, they would have emerged in the last 2,000 years. Every argument I've seen for Christianity does not only fail to be a good argument, they all fail to be remotely non-retarded. From this, I can conclude that there do not exist any non-retarded arguments for Christianity, as if there were such arguments, Christians would be all over them like stink on shit. Yet Christians persist in putting forth the most idiotic arguments for their religion in the history of arguments, and cannot come up with even a single non-retarded argument for their religion. I conclude that no retarded arguments for Christianity exist, and that every Christian has either retardedly accepted a retarded argument or has been brainwashed into accepting Christianity as a child. And children are basically retarded, as they are not adults yet. So, fuck you, retards. Your religion is retarded. You've had 2,000 years to come up with a non-retarded argument and have utterly failed. You're all fucking retards. Now, for a prayer. Dear Jesus, save me from your followers. I haven't even discussed the ones speaking in tongues or the ones who take up serpents, meaning the back hill ones who snake handle. Okay, I'm going to play a song. If I can find where it is, I got a lot of stuff loaded up in here. All right, I passed it up. Here it is. Some Aerosmith. Apple by Aerosmith. She ate it, never knowing wrong from right. So, did I mention that you Christians are also terrorists? Well, seems to me that when you tell somebody, if they don't follow what it is you believe, that is pure terrorism. If you say that they're going to go to hell and spend eternity in torment. I mean, you know, how terroristic can you get, especially to a young child? I mean, that is the definition of terrorism. Well, what I'm going to do next here, I've got something by an author whose last name is Lash, L-A-S-H, and it's an interview of him, and he discusses some things that happened in history that some of you may not be aware of, and you need to be if you're not. And it is pretty common knowledge among researchers, but there's a lot of people who, especially Christians, who don't read anything that doesn't support their dogma. I mean, after all, that would be of the devil to do so. So, without further ado.
My guest today is John Lamb Lash, a practicing mythologist. He is the principal author and contributor to MetaHistory.org, which inquires into the contemporary meanings of myths and beliefs. His most recent book is Not in His Image, Gnostic Vision, Deep Ecology, and the Future of Belief. John Lamb Lash joins us today from his home in Spain. John, welcome to Radioactive.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you here as well. You begin your work in 415 CE with the murder of a pagan noblewoman outside the Great Library at Alexandria. Take us there. Who was Hypatia? Describe her murder and explain why her death was a turning point in world history.
Yes, well, I began my book with a rather dramatic story of a murder, and we do have 7 eyewitness accounts of that murder from the time it happened in 415 A.D. Hypatia was a woman of the age of 45 at that time. She was the daughter of the head of the School of Mathematics at the famous Alexandrian Library. And she was a teacher, a mathematician, a scientist, a mystic, an educator, and a writer. And she was possibly also the inventor of the astrolabe. So Hypatia was, in historical terms, a rather impressive figure. The reason that I choose her to start my book is because of the way she was murdered and the significance of that crime. It's well known that when she was leaving the school at Alexandria one day, you could imagine, for instance, a woman teaching in a college in the United States, some institution of higher education, leaving, going out into the parking lot, getting into her car. Hypatia had her own chariot, and she was driving herself home. And she was confronted by a Christian mob. And she was murdered by that mob in the street. And the violence of that particular murder is, of course, graphic, as you know, from the first chapter of my book. But even more powerful is the repercussions of that murder. Many historians believe that the murder of Hypatia in Alexandria represents the death and the end of the classical world and the entrance of Europe into the Dark Ages. And very briefly, I'll give you the reason why they think this is the case. It's because Hypatia symbolizes, we could even say that she embodies, the pagan intellectual class of Europe in pre-Christian times and down into Christian times. And so everything that that pagan intellectual class represented, they were teachers, mystics, they were writers, artists, poets, they trained people in the trades. Everything that they represented that brought out the flowering of the classical world was symbolically destroyed by her death. So it's a very critical moment in the history of Western civilization.
And why the threat? Why the need to murder Hypatia, burn the libraries? What were the Christians so threatened by?
Well, I would like to point out something here. This is an excellent question. We are taking on a vast sweep of subjects here. And by the way, your paraphrase of the ideas in my book was really brilliant, so thank you for that. I would say that the essential thing to grasp here is that Christianity rose to power over a number of centuries. Let's say we go back to the first century when Jesus supposedly lived, and then after Jesus died, it was when Christianity was actually created. And that didn't happen overnight. It took about three or four centuries for the ideology and the beliefs and the practices of the new religion to be defined. Now, I would point out that during those 400 years, the people who began to embrace the new religion of Christianity, the belief system in the Savior, the belief that there is an off-planet Father who takes care of us on the one hand but will punish us on the other hand if we don't behave properly, the belief that the Father will stand over in judgment of the world at some final day, all of that was formulated over a period of about 400 years, and as it was being formulated, now this is the key thing, the people who were formulating it and the people who were embracing Christianity did not enter into a friendly and fair dialogue with the pagan people. They did not enter into an open debate with the religions that already existed in the ancient world. Rather than do that and come to them with a spirit of generosity, they came to those pagan religious beliefs and to the people who held them with a spirit of hostility, very much like we see today when we look at fundamentalist religion. We in the West, we in America, tend to be terribly alarmed about the nature of Islamic extremism and about the violence and the threatening attitude that we see at times coming from certain sectors of Islam. I'm sure this is something we will all agree. Well, transpose that back to the 4th century, back to Hypatia's time. She and the other pagans and people who embraced non-Christian religions in that era were facing the same kind of violent, threatening, and overpowering religious fundamentalism, and it was coming from Christianity. So Christianity rose to power not because the first Christians convinced other people that it was a better thing to believe, or that they, because the ideas were so appealing that people couldn't resist them. It primarily came to power through events of violence, events of imposition, coercion, and the destruction of any of the competition. Mm-hmm. So the death of Hypatia is also significant because it marks the beginning of a long, long campaign that really went on for 1,000 years. It went on into the Renaissance. It culminated in the Inquisition. And that campaign, which was directed by Christians and by the Vatican and Rome, was intended to destroy all alternative beliefs that might appeal to people rather than the fundamental beliefs of Christianity.
And you argue that the pagans were challenging the salvationist ideas that the church was pushing.
Well, certainly. One of the things that we need to understand, we're looking at ancient history here, and it's rather forbidding and remote subject to many of us, perhaps. But one of the essential lessons we learn from looking back to ancient history is this. The pagan world was tolerant. The world of Christianity introduced intolerance. And so that was the struggle, and it's very much reflected in things that we see in the world today. There were people in the of a deep religious nature, whom we call the Gnostics. They were the teachers in these institutions called the Mysteries, which we can speak of a little further on.
Yes.
And these people saw the rise of the new religion, and they came forth and wanted to debate and discuss it and say, well, you know, is this Savior idea really a good idea? Do you really believe that Jesus was the incarnation of a divine being? This is a dogma, by the way, that was forced into rule by the Emperor Constantine in the 4th century. The belief in the incarnation of Jesus originally, the belief in the divinity of Jesus, was not something that people embraced because they thought it was a wonderful idea. It was something that was implemented by the Roman Empire as a state policy. And so there were people in the pagan world who had an open mind and a tolerant mind toward this new religion. You know, many people may be shocked to hear this, but we hear about the history of Christianity in a very biased way. We hear that Christians were thrown to the lions or fed to the lions for entertainment and that they were persecuted. And that is true. I don't deny that. In some cases, that did occur. But on a far larger scale, Christians persecuted the people who would not go along with their new religious system. And so there was a battle of beliefs going on at that time. We are living today in the consequences of that battle.
Absolutely.
Well, there you have it. There's the source of the problem on a social level, right there. That's when it all began. And I want to thank you, dear Christians, for the Dark Ages. If that's not retardation, I don't know what is. So, anyway, I'm going to come back to Christianity here in just a minute. I'm going to take a break from that. And I'm going to pick on New Age and give you some of my thoughts on that. This is I'm going to play a commentary from one of my other shows that I don't think many of you actually caught because I read it on one of my astrology shows, and most of you still don't really, I think, take the occult seriously yet. That's a guess, but I'm guessing that you don't. In time, you may. But anyway, it was probably not heard by most of you, and so I'm going to go ahead and play it now.
Look at New Age, or the Judeo-Christianized version of witchcraft. One of the major goals of Christianity is to destroy the past and replace it with fictitious versions that conform to the lie of Christianity. Recently, they've been working to turn the religion into a goddess cult by gradually getting rid of the horn gods so there will be fewer and fewer ties with the original religions. Wicca and New Age are both a bogus movement, not based upon the facts, but like Christianity, it is based upon stolen and altered rites and teachings. Like Christianity, it depends upon the ignorance of its followers to thrive. Wicca is simply Satanism light. It is a waste of time and for fools. I will elaborate further by explaining the Wiccan threefold law of return. I want to expose this lie and its origins. The threefold, the tenfold, the hundredfold, however many folds you want to give this, all of these were invented by a few to frighten the masses in order to maintain spiritual control. With the availability of knowledge in modern times, witchcraft could no longer be suppressed, so the oppressors had to find a way to keep it in line so real power and control can remain in the hands of the few. These few know the truth and are adepts in black magic, which they use liberally to spiritually enslave the masses. They control the mainstream religions that are nothing but programs to suppress knowledge and control humanity. The following information exposes this lie for what it is. Now, there's going to be some French in here, and as I've said before, someone from Southeast Texas just ain't going to speak French real well, so I'll try to get through some of this as best I can. The first known reference in print to the threefold law of return appeared in 1970 in a book called Witchcraft Ancient and Modern by Raymond Buckland, who was initiated into the craft by Gerald Gardner and was instrumental in introducing Gardnerian witchcraft into the United States. With enough research, it is evident that the threefold emerged with the Gardnerian tradition. Then we have the sevenfold, and I'm sure everyone has heard of the tenfold. My point here is none of this recent man-made nonsense has anything to do with the original religions. Its sole purpose is to keep people from using their inborn power and to promote a passive attitude that is accepting of abuse. This is no different from the Christian church. This threefold teaching was taken from the Eastern concept of karma after it emerged with Western Christianity. After the Eastern teachings of karma picked up the Judeo-Christian overtones of divine punishment, the product evolved into yet another system of control with the same theme of keeping power in the hands of a few who know how to use it to exploit humanity. One thing led to another, and Gerald Gardner added more to this and promoted the belief that witches must never use their powers to cause harm. Everyone has to take abuse and keep the passive attitude. The Wiccan read, "And it harm none, do what ye will." According to Gardner, the creed is derived from good King Palsal, who declared, "Do what you like so long as you harm no one." King Palsal is a fictitious character from the French novel by Pierre Louis called Les Aventures du Roi Palsal, or something along those lines, in 1901, reprinted in 1925, numerous times since. Or The Adventures of King Palsal, or The Body Good-Natured Sovereign. This is the basis of Wicca. Wicca is nothing more than a Christianized version of the old religions. Wiccans have taken selected rites and teachings to suit their whims from the original religions and have twisted, corrupted, and transformed them, and are now passing themselves off as the original religion. As I've said before, they like to cut the head off of the original, put theirs on top, and then prance around and act as if theirs is the original and everyone else is a copycat. They do that with everything. The hypocrisy can be readily seen in the gods they acknowledge. Many, if not most, of these gods and goddesses that they claim to worship were the ones who brought the teachings of magic to humans, both white and black magic. They are known as the fallen ones. The original horn god is Satan. In addition, few Wiccans bother to do any in-depth research regarding the gods and goddesses they commune with and worship. Most of these deities are of the satanic pantheon of hell. Many Wiccans and more pagans also unknowingly mix their deities, in other words, angels with demons, and this can spell disaster. You can read a long list of deities these people claim to worship, and it is obvious they really know nothing much about them. Most of the writings consist of nothing but talk. For example, how Ishtar should be invoked instead of Astaroth, even though they are the same exact goddess. They claim using the name Astaroth is different, even though they readily admit she is the same goddess. Go figure. According to author Raymond Buckland, Wiccans claim their religious roots to be evident in a Paleolithic cave painting of a man dressed in stag skins, presumably performing a dance. Caverne de Troyes Frères, I can't read this, is the site of this cave painting somewhere in France, obviously. It is just that, a man dressed up in animal skins, and there literally is no proof of anything. Wicca is a Christianized corruption of the old pagan religions. Wicca is the Judeo-Christianized version of witchcraft. Again, one of the major goals of Christianity is to destroy the past and replace it with fictitious versions that conform to the lie of Christianity. The word Wicca actually comes from the same old English word as witch does. Wicca, meaning to yield or bend, as the Christianized Saxons would have it, to demons, which is a Greek word, daemons. It means gods or intelligences. Again, the original pentagrams pointed to the earth, not up in the air. And when I say again, you have to refer back to some of my previous presentations that I did with Mike. And by the way, I'm going to try to upload those onto my own personal Blog Talk Radio account here pretty soon to make it easier for people to find. So, for all you Wiccans and you New Agers as well, time to seriously get a fucking clue. Okay. This is mainly more about the modern Celtic and New Age here, this portion of it. Any criticism of New Age paganism or Wicca or even so Celtic derives from one simple fact, that being that it is a marketing exercise that is deliberately designed not to work in the way that real witchcraft did and still does. the word Celtic is also used because Gaelic is a bad word in Britain, as they have worked hard to eradicate the influence of their Gaelic culture there. Again, more Romanized than Gaelic. New Age, Wicca, etc. just rehashes old, hypocritical Christian moral values and symbols and attaches to them a host of products, services, and useless books with built-in obsolescence manufactured or written by cynical, unregenerate businessmen to whom any palely glimmering moments of enlightenment that have ever come have been when they have had to change a blown 40-watt bulb, and whose livelihoods depend on a captive customer base comprising of a cyclically revolving stream of inadequate, continuously buying the next soul-saving product or idea from them. Modern Wicca, like so much else in the 20th century society, is imitation and hollow mimicry. It is safe and respectable, and consequently, it is dead. If it had any intrinsic psychobiological value and any consequent potential for making significant social changes, the establishment would have squashed the New Age movement in the first few months of its emergence. Like everything else in the marketplace, however, it is no more than a fashion statement, a lifestyle choice with a price tag attached. Modern Wicca is nothing more than an invented hodgepodge of Anglo-Catholic white middle-class moral attitudes and desires. To wit, it is modern, born-again Christianity dressed up in the Edwardian pseudo-pornographic imagery of titillating young nymphs prancing naked around bonfires in deep dark woods, mixed in copiously with elements of fantasy paganism that could be found anywhere in the neoclassical and ersatz Celtic revivalist guff of the Victorian period. The New Age, Celtic or Wicca, or any other of the myriad of identical merchantable material or mental commodities being offered to fill the deliberately manufactured holes in people's personalities, are any more than pecuniary responses to the manifestation of the individual's social inadequacy. They are created and fueled by corporate greed, the sole inspiration and emotive force behind the new fads and services that emerged to fill gaps in world markets, which were contrived by the establishment's conditioning of its captive consumer workforce to be inadequate in the first place. In Britain, for example, the British Trading Standards Office demands of the manufacturer or service provider that any goods or services offered for sale by them should be fit to be used for the purpose for which they were intended. And where the New Age movement, Wicca, and indeed modern revivalist Christianity are concerned, all fall below this definition, and furthermore, technically fall foul of the British Trades Description Act. All, including revivalist Christianity, need to be investigated in these terms and in relation to the British Fraudulent Mediums Act. They won't be because they make money. They're impotent and harmless as far as the security services are concerned, and they keep the bald pink monkeys quiet in their semi-detached consumer cages. However inadequate and fraudulent these services are in relation to what they claim to be to achieve for people, they are nevertheless adequate and succinct social indicators. The boom in these markets reflects the increasing sense of alienation and the dissatisfaction and disillusionment in traditional values and institutions felt by the consumer. The former two are not real Celtic, not real magic, and not real witchcraft, any more than the latter is the genuine old-time New Testament Christianity that the besuited preachers would have us believe it to be. They are all worst-guessing marketing hype, as are the endless stream of sanitized books. This in itself is a clear indication that they speak not the truth, nor do they stand for truth, but rather the continuity of their own survival and for the maintenance of their power base and their profit margins. If they are prepared to ditch the central concepts of heaven and hell, which they cherished dearly for centuries, as a tool for propagating fear with which to control the people. They are capable of any adjustment in the name of mammon. They are pecuniary hypocrites to man. This is not a new age of enlightenment, but simply the old school, the religious, academic, industrial establishment, flogging reconditioned junk in the hope that they can continue to hoodwink the cretinous masses from which they feed like leeches, into staying put and continuing to work subserviently for their sole benefit. The Celtic, Wicca, and New Age movement, like born-again Christianity, is big business worldwide, and if it were actually capable of helping people to achieve what it says they can achieve, it would go bust in a matter of months, along with 90% of the world's manufacturing and service industries, which would also be deemed irrelevant, becoming redundant as people across the globe achieve a sense of personal self-sufficiency, self-sufficient integrity as the planet entered a new age of peace. Under the prevailing social economic conditions, the much lauded age of Aquarius can never be the age of the individual who attains integrity and personal sovereignty. It can only be the age of selfish insularity, exacerbated by the ever-increasing pressure upon the consumer slaves of the free West to further cultivate the same old sense of greed and fear, which will in turn goad them into buying more and more in order to assuage the ever-increasing sense of impotence, disenfranchisement, loneliness, and pointlessness that the corporate elites have instilled in them for centuries. To the sociologists who advise governments, we have become categorized into numbered social units. To those governments' military tacticians, we are expendable civilian collateral assets. And to the tradesmen who control these governments, we are consumers. Do we wish to continue to be labeled so cynically and only according to our relative value to any given elite or its agents? You want real Celtic? Learn about the Druids. You want mystical Christianity? Study Crowley. Okay,
I'm back. And yes, I have already uploaded all of the shows onto my personal Blog Talk account, and they have been linked back here on the Renegade site. And so there you have it for the New Age bullshit, karma, the term Celtic. Actually, we're all Teutonic. Celtic is simply just a way to avoid the Gaelic influence into society that, you know, obviously is suppressed over in Britain, and that is carrying on over to this country. And, of course, New Age, rather Christianity itself, along with it. So, anyway, I've got a piece here that I want to play on Mormons. And if you want a good laugh, except for the fact that it's so disgustingly retarded that, well, I'll let you hear it. See what you think.
We've produced a piece of animation to show you what Mormon theology is really all about.
Mormonism teaches that trillions of planets scattered throughout the cosmos are ruled by countless gods who once were human like us. They say that long ago on one of these planets, to an unidentified god and one of his goddess wives, a spirit child named Elohim was conceived. This spirit child was later born to human parents who gave him a physical body. Through obedience to Mormon teaching and death and resurrection, he proved himself worthy and was elevated to godhood as his father before him. Mormons believe that Elohim is their heavenly father, and that he lives with his many goddess wives on a planet near a mysterious star called Korah. Here the god of Mormonism and his wives, through endless celestial sex, produced billions of spirit children. To decide their destiny, the head of the Mormon gods called a great heavenly council meeting. Both of Elohim's eldest sons were there, Lucifer and his brother Jesus. A plan was presented to build planet Earth, where the spirit children would be sent to take on mortal bodies and learn good from evil. Lucifer stood and made his bid for becoming savior of this new world. Wanting the glory for himself, he planned to force everyone to become gods. Opposing the idea, the Mormon Jesus suggested giving man his freedom of choice, as on other planets. The vote that followed approved the proposal of the Mormon Jesus, who would become savior of the planet Earth. Enraged, Lucifer cunningly convinced one-third of the spirits destined for Earth to fight with him in revolt. Thus, Lucifer became the devil and his followers the demons. Sent to this world, they would forever be denied bodies of flesh and bone. Those who remained neutral in the battle were cursed to be born with black skin. This is the Mormon explanation for the Negro race. The spirits that fought most valiantly against Lucifer would be born into Mormon families on planet Earth. These would be the lighter-skinned people, or white and delightsome, as the Book of Mormon describes them. Early Mormon prophets taught that Elohim and one of his goddess wives came to Earth as Adam and Eve to start the human race. Thousands of years later, Elohim, in human form once again, journeyed to Earth from the starbase Kolob, this time to have sex with the Virgin Mary, in order to provide Jesus with a physical body. After Jesus Christ grew to manhood, he took at least three wives, Mary, Martha, and Mary Magdalene. Through these wives, the Mormon Jesus, for whom Joseph Smith claimed direct descent, supposedly fathered a number of children before he was crucified. According to the Book of Mormon, after his resurrection, Jesus came to the Americas to preach to the Indians, who the Mormons believe are really Israelites. Thus, the Jesus of Mormonism established his church in the Americas as he had in Palestine. By the year 421 A.D., the dark-skinned Indian Israelites, known as Lamanites, had destroyed all of the white Nephites in a number of great battles. The Nephites' records were supposedly written on golden plates and buried by Moroni, the last living Nephite in the hill Cumorah. 1,400 years later, a young treasure seeker named Joseph Smith, who was known for his tall tales, claimed to have uncovered these same gold plates near his home in upstate New York. He is now honored by Mormons as a prophet because he claimed to have had visions from the spirit world in which he was commanded to organize the Mormon Church because all Christian creeds were an abomination. It was Joseph Smith who originated most of these peculiar doctrines which millions today believe to be true. By maintaining a rigid code of financial and moral requirements and through performing secret temple rituals for themselves and the dead, the Latter-day Saints hope to prove their worthiness and thus become gods. The Mormons teach that everyone must stand at the final judgment before Joseph Smith, the Mormon Jesus, and Elohim. Those Mormons who are sealed in the eternal marriage ceremony expect to become polygamous gods in the celestial kingdom, rule over other planets, and spawn new families throughout eternity. The Mormons thank God for Joseph Smith, who claimed that he had done more for us than any other man, including Jesus Christ. The Mormons believe that he died as a martyr, shed his blood for us, so that we too may become gods.
Now, is that fucking retarded or is that fucking retarded? Okay. And again, like I said before, the Mormon translation of the Old Testament of Isaiah, where there's a reference to Lucifer, matches all the others, and therefore there's a huge problem with their argument. Okay, let's listen to see the Jehovah Witnesses and see what kind of retards these people are.
Teaching on Jesus Christ is that Jesus is the Son of God. He was the first thing that Jehovah created, and through him other creative works were done. Now, some religions teach that God and Jesus are one and the same, but the Bible does not teach that, and therefore neither do Jehovah's Witnesses.
We believe that the Bible teaches that Jesus carries out a number of functions for Jehovah God, the Most High. For example, in the Hebrew Scriptures, he is referred to as Michael. Michael, literally translated into English, means who is like God.
Witnesses believe that Jesus Christ is a spirit creature, a super angel, the first creation of Jehovah God, who prior to coming to earth as a man, existed in heaven as Michael the archangel. Jesus started out originally as the Logos. Or Michael the archangel. Who then came to earth as the virgin-born son of Mary. He was a perfect, sinless man. But he was only a man, devoid of all divinity. Jesus walked the earth as a man, becoming the Christ only when he was baptized. Jehovah's Witnesses hold the cross in contempt, feeling that it is nothing more than a pagan symbol used by apostate Christendom. Instead, they teach that at the completion of his ministry, Jesus died, not on the cross, but on an upright stake. Christ's body was then laid in a tomb, where it was disintegrated by God, totally destroyed forever. Jesus was then recreated by the Father. Before going to heaven, he materialized in different bodies on different occasions to convince his disciples and others that he had really been resurrected. Jesus returned to his Father in heaven, where once again he became Michael the archangel. He will never again be seen on the earth in visible form, but instead rules invisibly from the heavens. When he executes judgment over the world at Armageddon, he will destroy all but the faithful Jehovah's Witnesses. Michael will always remain invisible to those on earth and can be seen only by the 144,000 select Jehovah's Witnesses who rule with him from heaven.
How convenient. Can only be seen by those 144,000. Okay, well, all right, I'm going to pick on Scientology for a while. This is not any form of Christianity, obviously, per se, although I can see in some ways some similarities. And by the way, L. Ron Hubbard did come out of the school of Aleister Crowley. And so, without further ado, let's listen to what they have to say.
The Mu, also known as the Mu, was, according to Scientology founder and science fiction writer L. Ron Hubbard, the dictator of the Galactic Confederacy who, 75 million years ago, brought billions of his people to Earth in DC-8-like spacecraft, stacked them around volcanoes and killed them using hydrogen bombs. Scientology holds that the essences of these many people remained, and that they form around people in modern times, causing them spiritual harm. Members of the Church of Scientology widely deny or try to hide the Xenu story. These events are known within Scientology as Incident 2, and the traumatic memory is associated with them as the Wall of Fire. The story of Xenu is part of Scientologist teachings about extraterrestrial civilizations and alien interventions in earthly events, collectively described as space opera by Hubbard. Hubbard detailed the story in Operating Phaeton Level 3 OT-3 in 1967, warning that this material was calculated to kill by pneumonia, etc. anyone who attempts to solve it. The Xenu story is part of the Church of Scientology's secret advanced technology, normally only revealed to members who have already contributed large amounts of money. The Church avoids mention of Xenu in public statements and has gone to considerable effort to maintain the story's confidentiality, including legal action on the grounds of both copyright and trade secrecy. Despite this, much material on Xenu has leaked to the public via court documents, copies of Hubbard's notes, and the internet. The story of Xenu is covered in OT-3, part of Scientology's secret advanced technology doctrines taught only to advanced members who have undergone many expensive hours of auditing and reached the state of clear. It is described in more detail in the accompanying Confidentialists lecture of October 3, 1968, and is dramatized in Revolt in the Stars, a screenplay written by L. Ron Hubbard in 1977. Hubbard wrote that 75 million years ago, Xenu was the ruler of a galactic confederacy which consisted of 26 stars and 76 planets, including Earth, which was then known as Tegak. The planets were overpopulated, with an average population of 178 billion. The galactic confederacy's civilization was comparable to our own, with aliens walking around in clothes which looked very remarkably like the clothes they wear this very minute, and using cars, trains and boats looking exactly the same as those circa 1950, 1960 on Earth. Xenu was about to be deposed from power, so he devised a plot to eliminate the excess population from his dominions. With the assistance of psychiatrists, he summoned billions of his citizens together under the pretense of income tax inspections, then paralyzed them and froze them in a mixture of alcohol and glycol to capture their souls. The kidnapped populace was loaded into spacecraft for transport to the site of extermination, the planet of Tegak Earth. The appearance of these spacecraft would later be subconsciously expressed in the design of the Douglas DC-8, the only difference being the DC-8 had fans, propellers on it, and the space plane didn't. When they had reached Tegak or Earth, the paralyzed citizens were unloaded around the bases of volcanoes across the planet. Hydrogen bombs were then lowered into the volcanoes and detonated simultaneously. Only a few aliens' physical bodies survived. Hubbard described the scene in his film script, Revolt in the Stars. Simultaneously, the planted charges erupted. Atomic blasts ballooned from the craters of Lu, Vesuvius, Shasta, Washington, Fujiyama, Etna, and many, many others. Arching higher and higher, up and outwards, towering clouds mushroomed, shot through with flashes of flame, waste and fission. Great winds raced tumultuously across the face of Earth, spreading tales of destruction. L. Ron Hubbard, Revolt in the Stars. The now disembodied victims' souls, which Hubbard called Thetans, were blown into the air by the blast. They were captured by Xenu's forces using an electronic ribbon, which also was a type of standing wave, and sucked into vacuum zones around the world. The hundreds of billions of captured Thetans were taken to a type of cinema, where they were forced to watch a 3D, super colossal motion picture for 36 days. This implanted what Hubbard termed various misleading data, collectively termed the R6 implant, into the memories of the hapless Thetans, which has to do with God, the devil, space opera, etc. This included all world religions, with Hubbard specifically attributing Roman Catholicism and the image of the crucifixion to the influence of Xenu. The two implant stations cited by Hubbard were said to have been located on Hawaii and Las Palmas in the Canary Islands. In addition to implanting new beliefs in the Thetans, the images deprived them of their sense of personal identity. When the Fetmans left the projection areas, they started to cluster together in groups of a few thousand, having lost the ability to differentiate between each other. Each cluster of Fetmans gathered into one of the few remaining bodies that survived the explosion. These became what are known as body Fetmans, which are said to be still clinging to and adversely affecting everyone except those Scientologists who have performed the necessary steps to remove them. A government faction known as the Loyal Officers finally overthrew Xenu and his renegades, and locked him away in an electronic mountain trap from which he still has not escaped. Although the location of Xenu is sometimes said to be the Pyrenees on Earth, this is actually the location Hubbard gave elsewhere for an ancient Martian report station. Tegak, or Earth, was subsequently abandoned by the Galactic Confederacy and remains a pariah prison planet to this day, although it has suffered repeatedly from incursions by alien invader forces since that time. The cost of learning these secrets from the Church of Scientology was £3,830, or $6,500, in 1988. This is additional to the cost of the prior courses which are necessary to be eligible for OT3, which could be well over $100,000. Belief in Xenu and body Fetmans is a requirement for a Scientologist to progress further along the bridge to total freedom. Within Scientology, the Xenu story is referred to as the Wall of Fire or Incident 2. Hubbard attached tremendous importance to it, saying that it constituted the secrets of a disaster which resulted in the decay of life as we know it in this sector of the galaxy. The broad outlines of the story that 75 million years ago a great catastrophe happened in this sector of the galaxy which caused profoundly negative effects for everyone since then are publicly admitted to lower-level Scientologists. However, the details are kept strictly confidential, at least within the Church. The OT3 document describes how Hubbard entered the Wall of Fire but emerged alive, probably the only one ever to do so in 75 million years. He first publicly announced his breakthrough in Ron's Journal 67 RJ67, a taped lecture Hubbard recorded on September 20, 1967 to be sent to all members of the Church. According to Hubbard, his research was achieved at the cost of a broken back, knee and arm. OT3 contains a warning that the R6 implant is calculated to kill by pneumonia, etc. anyone who attempts to solve it. In RJ67, Hubbard then alludes to the devastating effect of Xenu's genocide. And it is very true that a great catastrophe occurred on this planet and in the other 75 planets which formed this galactic confederacy 75 million years ago. It has since that time been a desert, and it has been the lot of just a handful to try to push its technology up to a level where someone might adventure forward, penetrate the catastrophe, and undo it. We're well on our way to making this occur. OT3 also deals with Incident 1, set 4 quadrillion years ago or roughly 300,000 times longer than the current scientifically accepted value for the age of the universe. In Incident 1, the unsuspecting Fetman was subjected to a loud snapping noise followed by a flood of luminescence, then saw a chariot followed by a trumpeting cherub. After a loud set of snaps, the Fetman was overwhelmed by darkness. This is described as the implant offering the gateway to this universe, meaning that these traumatic memories are what separate Fetmans from their static natural, godlike state. Hubbard uses the existence of body Fetmans to explain many of the physical and mental ailments of humanity which, he says, prevent people from achieving their highest spiritual levels.
Okay, if that was that not retarded, or was that not retarded? Here's a real short piece. Okay, that was the end of the video there. Okay, here's a real short piece on Xenu, and then we'll discuss another issue afterwards.
75 million years ago, this planet was called Tegeak. There were 90 planets in this sector called the Galactic Confederation.
This is part of the text of a Hubbard lecture.
They had elected a fellow by the name of Xemu to the supreme ruler, and they were about to unelect him. And he took the last moments he had in office to really goof the floof. Xemu decided to take radical measures to overcome the population problem. beings were captured on other planets and flown to locations near 10 volcanoes or more on Earth. H-bombs were dropped on the volcanoes, destroying the bodies of the beings who, as thetans, attached themselves to one another as clusters. A revolt followed of the loyal officers against Zemu. Zemu was locked up in an electronic mountain fortress and remains there still. Since that time, beings born on this planet have had clusters of thetans attached to their bodies. OT-3 can run out these clusters and cause them to leave us and reincarnate as individuals.
After hours of expensive auditing, you are rid of the body thetans attached to you. You may then acquire psychic powers, move objects at a distance, and have out-of-body experiences. If you find you can't, then you must take the course again for another £5,000.
Now, my point here is that if you can buy any of that, that's no different than buying Christianity. I mean, what is the difference here? It's all garbage, right? And apparently people will buy just about anything. Now, what I'm going to play next is something I did on my first show regarding Martin Luther King Jr. I had been wanting to get to it in previous presentations and was not able to. And I know that a lot of people are not aware that I even did it, because if they look in the bio, all they see is Martin Luther King. They don't see this. I think it was mentioned in it, but you got to dig a little bit to see it, perhaps. But my point is, on the Norse religion or the Norse mythology, is not to pick on it so much as to point out that what it does do is that it provides an avenue of demonstrating what the original Aryan beliefs were. Now, as the Norse mythology is presented, it's nice archetypes, you know, okay. It's a way of defining to the culture, a way of creating a warrior spirit, perhaps. There's all different sorts of things involved with it that are beneficial. I don't really see anything negative about it. However, my point here is that when we know where it points to, and that this particular thing that it points to was worldwide, and what the Aryans followed and believed in and practiced, then the Norse mythology itself really does not present any sort of viable option as a belief system, not as it is written. Okay, now don't take me wrong. Like I said, there are positive things about it, and there's much to be gained. However, what I want to point out, again, is where does it lead to? And so I'm going to play this and let you hear this. The thing I want to discuss here tonight is a little bit about Norse mythology, or at least that is what it's called. Now, I have done some shows with Mike here in the past, and I really wanted to get to this while I was doing those shows, but there was just not enough time to do so. And so it kind of got shoved on the back burner. And what I'm going to tell you is this. I'm going to read a little small essay here that somebody wrote over at The Joy of Satan about this. And I think it makes a lot of sense. But in order to fully understand this, you're going to have to go back and you're going to have to listen to my past presentations, or you are just not going to get it. Now, most people are familiar with what is called the exoteric. What is the outer meaning? What is the meaning to the average person on the street who is not informed to have the hidden meanings? What most people read is also to what we are left with after having all of the information tampered with by Christianity. And so there is enough there to figure out what the esoteric meaning actually is, but you have to be informed to understand it. Let me take a drink of my water here real quick. For some reason, my suffering from dry mouth right at the moment, and it has nothing to do with a bong, okay? Okay, So anyway, let me get started on this before we get into the Martin Luther King issues. In Europe, the missing eye symbology that you see in Votan is equivalent to the third eye symbology in other cultures. Okay? Now, there were also Gaels who were mistaken as being for Celts. And this is widely misunderstood in pop culture in general. And by the way, I will discuss pop culture in on my astrology show as well. And if you really have an interest in this, I also recommend that you go see, you go to YouTube and watch a video called The Viking Serpent, or better yet, order it from Reality Entertainment, who are the creators of it, and then you will grasp some of what I'm about to tell you here this evening. Now, the Celtic religion is really not understood by most neo-pagans, and it was part of a larger Aryan religion. Keep in mind, too, that a lot of what we call Celt is in fact Gaelic, and that the Celts, in a sense, are really a mythological construct. There was really only a Teutonic world. Now, I realize that the word came from other sources, and they were used to describe these peoples. And so it was not necessarily a word that was native to the peoples that were being described. So anyway, let me get started here. In Germany and Northwest Europe, this was settled out of Ireland and the other isles probably around 10,000 years ago. The Druids, or the Nadrids, as they were called, worshipped a godman named, whom many titles was also called Vod or Votan, who was hung on a tree, experienced a mystical death, and then reborn into a full god. The Tara Hill over in Ireland was found to have been at least one time ringed by 300-plus oak trees as part of its sacred enclosure. In this part, Odin is symbolic of the life force, and the tree represents the human soul. This is why the other title for Votan is Budha or Budhaya. In Ireland, as it relates to Mercury, and in Sanskrit, which is really the original language of the Aryans, now, Mercury is also symbolic of the life force. The science of alchemy in the East was literally called Nagara, which really is sort of after the serpent energy. Think sun and serpent as Naga, or serpent, and Ra, the sun, and what that means spiritually. In many ancient parts of the world, it was a literal serpent hung on a tree or a Tau cross, T-A-U cross. The Druids cut a cross into a sacred tree they used to honor Votan with. This is the meaning behind the Irminsul pillar that stood at one of the most sacred Druidic sites on the European continent till it was destroyed in a Jew-backed Christian crusade into the region. The Christian crusaders were fought against by pagan armies for decades, in some cases, till all of the fighters were killed to a man in an almost endless war, but it stopped the spread of Christianity further into Europe for centuries. The church did not have any real power in Northwest Europe till around the 14th or late 13th century. History has been rewritten as an attempt to cover this up. In this act against the Irminsul that sparked the Viking period, which led to several major Christian capitals being razed to the ground in revenge for the destruction of the Irminsul, this site also contains the history and sacred knowledge of the Aryan race going back over 15,000 years. The Irminsul is the Mount Meru axis, the world column or spinal column that connects the earth to the heavens, the root chakra to the crown, and the ascended serpent. The same pillar and religion of the Aryans was the exact same religion of the Innu pillar in Egypt. For some reason, this is lost amongst neo-pagans who write chapters of meaningless nonsense on the subject. This is one reason the pagan Bons, or the Cathars, worshipped a goddess named Mary, because another title for Astaroth is Isis, or Meru, or Mary. Literally, Mary, or Meru, the Mount Meru axis of the spinal column. The sacred tree was also called Asherah after her for this reason. As symbolic symbolically, Astaroth represented the Sophia, or the light of the serpent, or the yin aspect of the soul in the ancient world. That rises up the spine to eliminate one to their rebirth or gnosis. This reveals much of the Ismarun. The Bonds also worshipped Lucibel or Lucifer. They knew the Catholic Church was a Jewish corruption and blasphemy of the Aryan religion, and they wanted nothing to do with it. The mysteries of the Hellenics, as Albert Pike notes, and by the way, I am going to do part of a show on Albert Pike, and I'm going to straighten up this issue about him once and for all. So let me reread this. The mysteries of the Hellenics, as Albert Pike notes, were the same as the Druids and the Egyptians. Hugh, another title for Vaud, was the god who led the Aryans of the north to their new homelands. Hugh was worshipped as Dionysus, also called Huas or Hyas. One of the main meanings of Dionysus relates to the sacred mount at the top of the spinal column or world column. Dionysus is the sacred animals are the black goat, the snake, and the peacock. And he also carries a spear or a staff. Further east, Dionysus is worshipped as Siva, literally. Even the ancient Greeks mentioned this numerous times, as did the Vedic Aryans of the east. Siva's ganas are the Bacchantes, B-A-C-C-H-A-N-T-E-S, and both have the sacred phallus, etc. Again, that has nothing to do with homosexuality. That'll be covered under Pike and Freemasonry. Another title for Woden was Isis, and we look again at Dionysus. Okay, I know I'm not going to get this one right. Ichthys, or the fish, was one of the names of Dionysus, and the divine phallus was also known in the shape of a fish. The phallus is the spinal column with the kundalini fully risen. A, or Ea, is also shown as a fish-cloaked god in the Middle East, and Lord of the Water, as well as Lord of the Earth, for the same reason. This represents the life force. As D.M. Murdoch notes, the word Buddha is related to the Egyptian term for sky god, or father figure, Ptah, or Ptah, as well as Pitha, as in Pythagoras, Buddha plus Guru. Now, Churchward also states, Buddha is their representative of Ptah of the Egyptians. As mentioned before, Buddhism is the Christianity of the East, but under the corrupted form, some of the original is still lying there. You just have to look hard for it, which gives us forensic evidence to view the original if one can dig deep enough. When I state Buddha, I am not talking about the fiction Gautama, but the original pagan god and title. In Sri Lanka, Buddha is still also called Vod or Vodun, just as Christ Christos was originally the original title of the pagan sun god, which origins is Karast or Christ, the title for the resurrected pagan god. Both spellings mean sun or luminous. Buddhaya is also for the same reason and holds the same meaning. So we're looking at Vodun on a larger level. As a note, Christianity is literally a Jewish corruption from the original Aryan religion, of which all Aryan religions held the same tradition at the core. We are looking at the Grail here, as well as Bacchanalian rites, which had a special cup called Agathodaimon, good serpent in English, of which consecrated wine was drunk from, and Buddha had a serpent chalice that drinking from gave enlightenment and immortality or eternal life to. The wine represented the blood of the serpent or the kundalini energies mentioned in some texts as mercury or ether. And the cup represents the world or human soul. It should be noted that the agathodaimon, meaning good serpent, what the title demon connects to as is serpents. In some texts, our gods were called the blazing serpents in the sense of shining ones. The serpent and the sun are one and the same. So we are right back to the magnum opus. The Grail is the literal symbol of Lucifer. The warrior must die pierced by a blade, essentially the sword in battle, to go to Valhalla. It is an allegory for the chaos stage and the ascent of the kundalini in its piercing aspect. In the ancient world, the sword, spear, and dagger were also symbols of the serpent power. The Valkyrie takes him over the Rainbow Bridge to Valhalla, and we are looking at the Shaki rising up the spine to the crown chakra. In the east, where Bonpo, or Po, another name for Buddhaya, was its core tradition, was called the Great Perfection and centered on creating the rainbow body. The Vedas hold the same images of the rainbow, and so did the Hellenistic schools. The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow comes from such schools. It's an allegory that lived on in folktales. Votan carries a spear, which is the spinal column, with the head or tip being the pineal gland. It is also stated it is a symbol of the piercing aspect of the Kundalini. Just as Murugan carries a spear, of which the head also is depicted as a peacock feather, and Shiva carries the trident, and Patah the staff. And the Americans, where the Aryans went and passed down this culture, the same god, Votan, is literally still called the Morning Star. Votan also leads the wild hunt as the Shiva in the east. So this is why Votan rules Valhalla. For the same reason in the east, he rules Shambhala. What is totally called, what today is called Odinism, was based on transformation and perfection of the soul to Godhead. God in Sanskrit is Deva, D-E-V-A, which is the power of the spiritual sun. The entire text on Odin, the sagas, and the sagas, are allegories for perfection of the soul. They have been altered by Christians, but enough of the original is within it to get the extent of the understanding. So to be an actual Odinism, as it really was, and not how neo-pagan wishes it, one would have to literally be a dedicated spiritual Satanist to fully understand this. Also, Votan was known as Spear Shaker. Invert the word and you get Shakespeare or Shakespeare. Additionally, any and all so-called fairy tales that we hear in our European culture are really allegories for passing on esoteric information. Okay. I hope that y'all enjoyed that and that you will research it further. I'm going to play a song which will take this into the archives. And so be sure and download this the show to catch the rest of it, because I'm going to try to go as close to the 3 hours as I can. I'm back. That last piece that I did on the Norse, Kyle made a video of that, and it is posted on the Renegade page right at the moment, and on YouTube, and I think it may be on the National Protectionism website. I'm not sure. I'd have to go check. But what I want to do is I want to continue with what I just played. And I want to read a little piece on the Druids here. And, of course, this is not going to be the final thing that I do on them. I will continue with them more in the future shows. It's just there's just so much that can be said. And, again, this is our original system. All right, I'm going to begin. The Druids. They were targets of persecution of a bloodline as well. They were the Merovingian long-haired sorcerer kings deposed by the church. They became the Knights Templar, and then later were persecuted and targeted during the Inquisition. Approximately 20% of all European Teutonic peoples are hereditary witches. Most don't even know this. This is also the reason for forcing other races on us. The multiculturalist genocide program. They want us wiped out. So you see, the Inquisition really isn't over. And who ran the church in the Inquisition? Jews did. So you see, I have every reason, personally, to hate these fucking Jews. For the Germanic peoples, true religion is founded in race. Thus, in tracing the foundation of German religion, we must necessarily go back to the beginnings of the Aryan race. According to Professor L. A. Waddell, the Sumerian civilization of Mesopotamia was founded in 3373 BCE. This was a fully-fledged Aryan culture, which some authorities consider to have been transplanted from Atlantis, thus surviving the cataclysm which then enveloped the world. Commons Beaumont has advanced the theory that ancient Britain was an outpost of the Empire of Atlantis, the first civilization. While Atlantis succumbed in the flood, Britain survived, together with the Aryan civilization, which consolidated itself in Asia Minor and afterwards spread itself all over the world. I have discussed the word Aryan on a past show. I believe it was March 31st of this year, which is 2013. I will touch on it here briefly again, and we'll have more in the future. The civilizations of Egypt and China were of later origin, and together with Greece and Rome, at their height of power, were Aryan in origin and pattern. From scientific observation, it is clear that the Aryans were traditionally long-headed, blue-eyed, and fair-haired people, and in their highest racial manifestation were the founders of social order, the creators of culture. The word Aryan derives from Arya, which in Indian and Persian language meant exalted or noble one. The Sumerian word Ara meant lofty, shining. The word aristocracy of modern usage comes from the same root. The true leadership of nations has always been derived from rule by the racial elite, with their whole life, religious, cultural, and political, founded in the eternal values of pure blood. The word Druid is said to be Greek in origin, and as D-R-Y-S means tree. As we shall see, the later Druid, also known as the Nadrids, is also related to Dru, meaning run, in Sanskrit, and Dries, D-R-Y-S, meaning a wren, W-R-E-N, specifically the gold crest, one of the birds most sacred to the Druids. For the present, we will concentrate on the Greek version of the word. Though the Druids are associated with groves, and as some will insist, with oak trees, it is feasible to suggest that in the light of their Sumerian and Ubaid origins, the Druids, as priest kings of the dragon, were connected specifically with the tree of life and the tree of knowledge, rather than any mundane or temporal shrubbery. Real trees represented the allegorical, exoteric for the esoteric. Accepting this, we may further suggest that, as priests of these preeminent trees of life and knowledge, they may be further identified with those magicians and scholars whose descendants, the Scythian Aryans or Sumerian Anunnaki, the dragon god kings, were instrumental in establishing the chakric system of Hindu and Buddhist Tantra as well as the Arabic and Greek Kabbalah with a Q, not a K. The K would be the Jews. Greek Kabbalah, whose magical systems, as we all know, contain a glyph called the Tree of Life. The Jews stole and perverted this. Generally speaking, this tree, a symbol of pathways, both macrocosmic and microcosmic in nature, links the various subtle energy centers, which are said to exist both in the universe as levels of density and emanation relating to the manifestation of cosmic power and being, and in the human body on the microcosmic level, as energy centers corresponding to the glands and the endocrinal system, E-N-D-O-C-R-I-N-A-L. In Kabbalah, again with a Q, the spheres which do not relate to the glands may be seen as points in the meridian system adopted by the Chinese. On another level, the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, with a Q, is a genealogical chart of the gods. The magical tree is a universal symbol. As in the early Sumerian depiction of the Tree of Life, the abode of Lilith, many of the subsequent Arabic, Indian, and European holy trees share common attributes. All have residing in their topmost branches some form of a bird. In Tantra, it is the swan, whose head rests within the Anja chakra, which corresponds to the pineal and pituitary glands in the corpus callosum, or callosum. In Welsh druidic lore, the bird is represented as the eagle, a typically shamanic totem bird which symbolizes the ascendant spirit. Here the eagle is the god Lu, L-L-E-U. In Ireland, he is the Danann King Lu, L-U-G-H, just like our Lu here on Renegade, the father of the Elven Llewellyn Kings of Gwynedd. If Lu really is descended from this king, and I believe he is, then this makes Lu and I related way up the genetic ladder. I think that's interesting. Additionally, Lu, L-U, or Lu, L-U-G-H, is from Hugh, H-U, or Huyas, H-U-Y-A-S, another title for Satan, meaning Shining One. Now, I did a piece on the word Aryan here a while back. Refer to that show. In Arabic Sufism, the bird is a peacock, which in Viking lore, the sacred tree Yisidril, has its base in a coiled serpent by a pool, and in its highest boughs, the bird of the released spirit, accompanied by a white hart. Yisidril is called the Axis Mundi and is seen as the tree which contains within its branches and roots the nine worlds of the Viking philosophical system, including their version of the clip-off that the Jews have put in their Tree of Life as the underworld. And by the way, the Jews consider that filth. Okay. Immediately, the similarity between it and the Kabbalistic with a Q and the Tantric trees become quite apparent, and this is no fluke. Some say the Druid's most sacred tree wasn't the oak, it was the apple tree, linked to which is the blue boar, B-O-A-R, both of which came originally, it was said, from the other world. For this reason, the tree of knowledge in the Garden of Eden was always depicted as the apple, but could be interchanged with the pomegranate for reasons which eventually will become apparent to the hardiest and most persistent reader through further research. And we will certainly get into that in the future. The mistletoe bard, whom we will encounter later as well, cut the golden bough from the apple prior to descending into the underworld. The mistletoe grew mainly on apple trees, which, as we shall see, are exclusively female. Therefore, the berries of the mistletoe represent the female and consequently the goddess fluid, not the seminal fluid of a male deity. And by the way, the word seminary that you hear in Christianity comes from the word semen. So how do you like those apples, Christians? I'm going to play another song here. Thank you. Okay, I'm back. I've got an essay here that I call The Real American Revolution, a Subverted Experiment. Its origin actually was, I believe, entitled The Apotheosis of George Washington, but I've added to it, called and modified it a little bit, and originally had done this for a more PC crowd when I did it, but the original version does not have all of the stuff in it that I added. So I'm just going to go ahead and read this as it is. Again, I call it The Real American Revolution, a Subverted Experiment. Following their victory in the Revolutionary War, two important documents were drawn up by the Freemasons in Philadelphia, a city ostensibly named after Philadelphus, the name of the Supreme Secret Society of Freemasons in France. The first of their documents, the Declaration of Independence, was authored primarily by the Freemason Thomas Jefferson and signed primarily by the high-ranking Freemasons of the 56 signers of the document. 50 were Freemasons, including the Grand Master John Hancock. After the Philadelphia Convention, the government of the United States began to take concrete form as the country's first president, the Freemasonic Grand Master George Washington, was sworn in by Robert Livingston. And actually, by the way, there were, I think, 9 presidents under the Articles of Confederation. So technically, George Washington was not really the first president. Was sworn in by Robert Livingston, Grand Master of the New York Lodge, with hordes of attending Freemasons cheering the inauguration. A new Nation of the Phoenix was officially born. 5 city squares of Philadelphia were designed to perfectly match the 5 major stars of Orion. When the wheels of the United States government finally began to turn, the new institution resembled one huge Freemasonic lodge. Most of the high-ranking officials in all 3 branches of government were either Freemasons or allied with the principles of Freemasonry. While the Grand Master Washington was presiding over the executive branch of the government, John Marshall, a brother Master Mason from Washington's Virginia Lodge, was chairing the judicial branch as its first Chief Justice. The majority of lawmakers in the House of Representatives and Senate were also Freemasons. We have built no temple but the Capitol. We consult no common oracle but the Constitution, quotes Rufus Choate. Choate. I guess I pronounced that right. Jefferson described the Capitol as a temple to sovereign liberty. This liberty is something much deeper than believed at face value. Jefferson believed true liberty was only possible through the enlightenment or the perfection of the being and the spiritual liberty or liberation that comes from it. Jefferson was, as mentioned, a high-ranking Mason and one of the greatest geniuses to have ever lived. This was the deep spiritual knowledge of the other founding fathers as well. The Masonic founders built their great temple in the form of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. Its construction is identical to the layout of the diagram of the body as found in Luxor in Egypt. Even the blueprints of Luxor perfectly overlay the Capitol building, as the ancient temples of the serpents were always built as diagrams of the human body with the formula of the great perfection encoded within. In the Capitol, we find the following under the central dome in the lowest west level, Washington's tomb, but yet he was buried at Mount Vernon, and a floor above this, the crypt in a civic building, which is actually a temple to the priest king and god ruler of Atlantis, Poseidon. It contains 40 high detailed stone pillars and stone flooring with beautiful chandeliers hanging from it, was modeled after the famed Temple of Poseidon in ancient Athens. In the center of the floor of this structure is a white star called the Seed of Washington, all the mile markers for Washington, D.C. are measured from. Neptune, or Poseidon in Greek, was simply the Sumerian Enki by another name and form, also known as Satan. Like his counterpart Enki, Neptune was primarily associated with the seas, although he was also known by his devotees of the Lord of the Earth. The identity of Neptune as king of the world is revealed by Greek names such as Enosithon, I can't pronounce that, meaning Earthshaker, a title that obviously links him to Lucifer. And that was by that last part was written by, taken rather from a quote from Mark Pinkham. The major case for Atlantis being in the West is made in Plato's works, the Timaeus and Critias. I guess I pronounced those right. And these accounts are based upon the Egyptian records. But that is not what the Egyptian record documents on the subject. That is not what the Egyptian record documents on the subject. The Egyptian record documents the opposite, that the Egyptians' origins are in the east, the land of the gods, Pa Nuter, which is modern India, of which it has been shown to share an identical culture. Enki was the priest king of Atlantis, known as the Peacock King or Melech Talos, among other titles. All the surviving traditions still directly linked to this area specifically state it as so. Washington is also seen in the image of a statue of the embodiment of Zeus seated, making the same sign of as above, so below. Refer to the Baphomet. One floor above is the rotunda. In the rotunda, the black and white floors lays the hallway leading into it. Directly above this is a mural called the Apotheosis of George Washington. Apotheosis means man into God. On the floor of the rotunda, in the direct center, in line with the white star below and the Washington image and the solar image above, is in a central axis. The painting above this dome shows Washington in the center, depicted as a resurrected God-man wearing a purple robe, which is the traditional symbol for the resurrected being or perfected being. It is a sign of divinity. The Roman emperor, who was also the high priest, wore this, and certain high-ranking druids also wore such robes as a mark of having achieved a high spiritual level. Washington is also making the traditional sign of Hermeticism, seen in the Baphomet. Note traditionally in the Christianized West, it was always Christ shown in such imagery, meaning that Washington was purposely put in place of the Christian Messiah, along with the pagan gods or demons by the Catholic confession, were being honored and reverenced in the Capitol building, with Neptune or Enki among them. Other aspects of this mural is Washington shown sitting on a throne placed upon a rainbow bridge surrounded by 13 star maidens, each with a star painted near their heads. This symbolizes the 13 major steps of the magnum opus and stands for the 13 major energy centers in the human body, which must be fully empowered in order to reach the perfected state. Four of these maidens, four is the number of Enki, by the way, the elements of creation, the qualities of the elements being fire, earth, air, water, are shown holding a banner over Washington that states, E pluribus unum, which is Latin for out of many, one. This has to do when all of the centers become as one with the finishing of the magnum opus. We'll discuss that more in the future. But if you've been listening to me, you understand what that is. The rainbow bridge Washington sits upon is a symbol of what is called the rainbow body. In Tibet, in Bon, which is what predated Buddhism and is still practiced in some places. Let me rephrase that, or rather reread it. The rainbow bridge Washington sits upon is a symbol of what is called the rainbow body in Tibet, in Bon, and also depicted other traditions such as the Norse Germanic Bifrost Bridge. In Bon, the ancient religion of Tibet, which was suppressed by Buddhism, the goal of a yogi or adept was to ascend and reach the highest state of the magnum opus, what the Tibetans call the Dzogchen, D-Z-O-G-C-H-E-N, or in plain English, the Great Perfection. Many images of lamas, ones who have ascended the Kundalini serpent, are shown in a radiant circle of the five lights of the rainbow body. The five lights being the purified elements and centers. I mentioned Bon as one of the most ancient still surviving traditions today and states it was founded 17,000 years ago by the god Muru, or the Egyptian Amon-Ra. Tibet was such an important area of surviving ancient Aryan spiritual knowledge that Himmler sent an SS expedition to the country and were received as friends and made allies with the Dalai Lama. Many monks returned with them back to Berlin to instruct and share spiritual knowledge with the SS. It's a little known fact that the SS officers were all required to have a daily practice of this process on orders from Himmler, himself an adept of the Thule Society. Today they have found the evidence that Aryans once lived across the entire eastern and far eastern regions in powerful civilizations from the Himalayas to North China before disappearing over time due to cultural mixing in with other races of the areas. Events forced them to seek other lands, in the process passing their culture on to other regions to this day in varying aspects of degrees. It was found the upper classes of the Tibetans possesses Aryan genes in a larger degree than to the lower classes who were purely racially Mongoloid. Note, Aryans were most likely not blonde hair with blue eyes, but red hair with green eyes, at least the upper levels anyway. It does not mean that if you're blonde hair, blue eyed, or dark haired, you're not an Aryan as well. Theos Bernard, an American yogi living in his guru's ashram in India in the early to mid part of the last century, was told by his Indian mentor to obtain full knowledge and the highest levels. Okay, this sentence is kind of screwed up here. He most traveled into the Himalayas and the Tibet. Okay, we'll just leave it at that. I didn't fix that when I sent this out in an email. Okay, more on this. In Sufism, S-U-F-I-S-M, it is called the most sacred body and the supra-elestical body. Taoists call it the diamond body, and those who have attained it are called the immortals and the cloud walkers. Yogic schools and tantrics call it the divine body. The ancient Egyptians called it the luminous body or being or the karast. This conception evolved into Gnosticism, where it is called the radiant body. In the Mithraic liturgy, it was called the perfect body. In the Hermetic corpus, it is called the immortal body. In the alchemical tradition, the emerald tablet calls it the golden body. Okay. Namkhai, Namkhai, Norbu Rinpoche, stated in Dream Yoga and the Practice of Natural Light the following. Body of Light. Okay, let's see here. Body of Light, Tibetan Jalas, also known as the Rainbow Body. A certain realized being achieved the transformation of their ordinary bodies into a body of light. Okay, and there's a reference to an article called See the Fountain of Youth, and I will one day get to that. In the painting of Washington that Dolly Madison saved from the British during the War of 1812 that hung in the White House, President Washington was shown standing with the caduceus beside him encoded in the table leg and a rainbow surrounding him in the background. This, as stated, is identical to the images of the lamas in Tibetan Bon and other famous images in the West. Further into this mural, beneath and around the scene mentioned, are six sections of images containing pagan gods. They are Thoth, T-H-O-T-H, Poseidon, or Enki, or Satan, Vulcan, Persephone, and Athena. And Athena is shown instructing Benjamin Franklin. The sixth image is the image of freedom. These are the traditional five gods of the alchemy of the soul, or the pure lights. The sixth image being of Q-U-I-E-S-C-E-N-C-E. I've never been able to pronounce that word. The sixth image being of that in the spiritual freedom that comes from the magnum opus, true liberty. The different scenes, also from form into a seven vignette, which correspond to the seven major chakras along the spine and the seven alchemical states of purification of them. The images in the mural from the pentacle of the five elements, five meaning fire, earth, air, water, spirit, and the star is seen in Astaroth's sigil. Okay, and Astaroth's sigil has to do with a demon sigil. They also form the pentagram, the symbol of drawing the energy down from above into the head and down into the spinal column, opening the centers in the proper form. The two images overlapping are identical in symbolism of the Mendez goat with the five-pointed star upon its forehead. Need to cough. Hold on. Next under this, we see 72 five-pointed stars or pentagrams, which represent the 72 steps of Godhead, also called the 72 names of God, which are the Goetia demon sigils, not the corrupted Hebrew version. The pentagram is also the symbol of Lucifer, as it marks the orbit of the planet Venus, also known as Phosphorus or Lucifer, which over an eight-year cycle of forward and retrograde motion in relation to the orbit of Earth, a.k.a. the morning star. The dome shape is based upon sacred geometry, and it is the pyramidal principle or receiver. This is why we have an empty tomb in the lower level that the center axis is perfectly in line with all the way up the other floors to the center of the dome, where Washington is sitting ascended as God. Washington is not in his tomb because he has been resurrected and placed upon the top of the dome. In ancient Egypt, it is believed their pharaohs were reborn as stars or perfected beings. The pharaohs were the high priests of the Egyptians. In reality, the dome acts as a receiver for an energy vortex which spins around the central axis and is important as in the ancient pyramid the initiate would lay in the king's chamber or tomb in the open sarcophagus, and the central axis of the pyramid would line up with the center of the forehead or the third eye and send this massive spiral of energy into the head, activating the psychic seat of the soul, the pineal gland or the third eye, and flooding the system with a massive wave of energy, helping to ascend and awaken the Kundalini power. In the Hebrew, this has been turned on its side, thus a perversion. Genesis 3:14, "And the Lord God said unto the serpent, Because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life." The American Revolution has thus been turned on its side, and dust it shall eat. Fuck you, Christians. The three floors also represent the trinity of the soul, the trine aspect of the male, female, and central channel, the three male and female centers, and the three knots the Kundalini must pass through to reach the crown and obtain apotheosis, as seen at the top of the third level. The dome is also shaped to represent the cave of Brahma, where the pineal gland resides. You can see the numerous pine cone symbolisms such as that represent the pineal gland within the dome. The architecture in the dome is identical to the court of the pine cone in the Vatican in this sense, which is blatant, just as the Pope's staff in his meaning. It's a blatant ripoff. The pine cone is the ancient symbol of the psychic seat of the soul. The pineal gland, even the name pineal comes from the term pine cone. Christianity has nothing of its own, all stolen and bastardized. Not too far away is the Washington Monument, which is a large obelisk that acts to draw power up from the earth and send it to the dome. A motion was introduced in Congress by Freemason John Marshall to erect a memorial in honor of the first president. It was decided that the most appropriate monument for the late Grand Master Freemason was the Egyptian frozen snake, the obelisk. Soon afterwards, in 1793, a special ceremony was held in the Freemason Robert Mills used square, level, and plumb, the symbolic tools of Freemasonry, to lay the cornerstone of what was to become a 600-foot-tall obelisk, the tallest structure of its kind in the world. And that was at the time. And, of course, it is actually 550 feet tall, or 6,660 inches, 666. Now, today, the San Jacinto Monument in Houston, Texas, is taller and was constructed in the 1930s by the Freemasons. It commemorates the victory of Texas over Mexico in the Texas Revolution, which is also why the Declaration of Independence of Texas is of importance on par with the American Declaration of Independence. And we'll get into that one day. A curious piece of the Masonic puzzle is the actual street layout for our capital city, Washington, D.C. You see, the city was laid out in the form of the central Masonic symbols, the square, the compass, the rule, and the pentagram. Take any good street map of downtown Washington, D.C. and find the Capitol building. Facing the Capitol from the mall and using the Capitol building as the head or top of the compass, the left leg is represented by Pennsylvania Avenue and the right leg Maryland Avenue. The square is found in the usual Masonic position with the intersection of Canal Street and Louisiana Avenue. The left leg of the compass stands on the White House, and the right leg stands on the Jefferson Memorial. The Circle Drive and Short Streets behind the building form the head and ears of what is called the Go to Mendez, commonly seen in satanic symbology. Sitting on top of the White House is an inverted five-pointed star or pentagram. It faces north, with the point down in true occult fashion. It sits within the intersections of Connecticut and Vermont Avenues, north to DuPont and Logan Circles, with Rhode Island and Massachusetts going to Washington Circle to the west and Mount Vernon Square on to the east. I need to cough. The pentagram or five-pointed star is, of course, both a Masonic symbol and the ancient symbol of witchcraft, with its point facing down, or south when placed on the ground. It is especially associated with Satanism. It is also the emblem of the Eastern Star, the Women's Masonic Organization. The center of the pentagram is 16th Street, where 13 blocks due north of the very center of the White House, the Masonic House of the Temple sits at the top of this occult iceberg. The Washington Monument stands in perfect line to the intersecting point of the form of the Masonic square, stretching from the House of the Temple to the Capitol building. Within the hypotenuse of that right triangle sits many of the headquarters buildings for the most powerful departments of government, such as the Justice Department, the U.S. Senate, and the unfortunately unconstitutional Internal Revenue Service, and illegal, by the way. On top of the dome is a statue of Freedom, which is a goddess depicted wearing a crown of stars. The rays of the halo of the ascended Kundalini power and is seen in the most famous role as the Statue of Liberty in New York, built by a fellow French Freemason, Frederick Bartholdi. The rays of the crown of her statue are the risen Kundalini power, and with the torch, she holds the eternal flame of life that it brings. The chains about her are broken as she has been liberated with the magnum opus. Many times, Liberty is shown wearing the Mithraic cap of the Masons. Who is the great goddess of America? Well, writes James Lloyd in Beyond Babylon, Auguste Berthollet was a member of the cultic Masonic Lodge in Paris, a secret international brotherhood linked to the ancient builders of the pyramids and the cathedrals. This is quoted from Statue of Liberty by Weisberger, by the way. And as a result, fellow members of the mysterious Order of Masons were frequently involved with the creation of the structure and the various ceremonies that were dedicated to it. For example, the pedestal was built by another Mason named Richard Hunt, and the design came from his study of pyramids, ziggurats, and other styles. You'll recall the Tower of Babel was a ziggurat, and of course the Statue of Liberty is actually a tower. Androgynous in appearance, the statue can be seen as a blending of Aphrodite and Hermes, is representative of blending of opposites, the masculine and the feminine, a composite of energies rather than opposing energies. Hermaphrodite, Hermes, Aphrodite. This statue also approximates the Greek sun god Apollo or the Roman sun god Helios as preserved on an ancient marble tablet today in the Archaeological Museum of Corinth in Greece. Apollo was represented as a solar deity dressed in a similar robe and having on its head a radiant crown with the seven spiked rays of the Helios Apollo's sun rays, like the statue's nimbus or halo. The ancient Colossus of Rhodes, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, was a statue of Helios with a radiant crown. The ancient Roman goddess Libertas was honored during the Punic War by a temple erected on the Aventine Hill in Rome by the father of Tiberius Gracchus. A statue in her honor was also raised by Claudius on the site of Marcus Tullius Cicero's house after it had been raised. The figure also resembles Sol Invictus, the Roman god of sun. And the main thing I want to point out in that quote is the fact that there is a resemblance to the sun god Sol Invictus. As the obelisk was completed in the 1880s, a number of American Christian clergymen were upset that a pagan goddess was being placed on American soil. The Masonic Lodge, in the meantime, kept a low profile to avoid unnecessary controversy, just as they did when they planned the erect penis, a phallic fertility symbol, the Washington Monument, another Egyptian obelisk symbolizing the rays of the Egyptian god shining down and enlightening mankind. The Masons, of course, trace the origin of their secret society back to the story of King Solomon, and from him back to the ancient Egypt. Now, Solomon actually can be correlated to an Egyptian king or a collection of them. Now, that was quoted by Alexander Hislop in his magnificent book, The Two Babylons, concerning the origins of Freemasonry, and this as well. It is admitted that the secret system of Freemasonry was originally founded on the mysteries of the Egyptian Isis, the goddess mother or wife of Osiris, not anything to do with Jews. But what could have led to the union of a Masonic body with these mysteries? As Hislop shows, Isis is the Egyptian name for the Babylonian goddess Ishtar, who is also the same as Athena in Greece, Minerva in Egypt and Greece, Astarte in Syria, Cybele in Rome, Astaroth in Canaan, and Diana in Sufis. The statue of the pagan Madonna, the Statue of Liberty, is a statue of this same ancient queen of heaven, the wife of Nimrod, or Semiramis, Astaroth has also been known as a goddess of fertility, love, and war. The clusters of three dots at the points of the star of her sigil are extremely ancient and denote her high spiritual rank. Her Sumerian title, Queen of Heaven, was stolen by Christians and used for their fictitious Virgin Mary. The Statue of Liberty in the New York Harbor is Astaroth, and she is the patron of the USA. Her number is 8 and is associated with wealth. The platform the Statue of Liberty stands on is built on the 8-pointed star of Astaroth as well. This goddess, so many times enshrined in America by the founders, is Astaroth. She is so beloved that in Nashville, Tennessee, the Masons built a perfect replica of the Parthenon. Her famous temple that stood in classical Greece. The Tennessee Temple holds one of the largest standing statues in the Western world, of Athena or Astaroth standing leafed in gold, holding Nike, N-I-K-E, a statue 6 feet tall in her hand. Beside her is her golden serpent raised next to her rod, the Kundalini serpent power. Astaroth is the protector of America. We have built no temple but the Capitol. We consult no common oracle but the Constitution, quotes Rufus Choate. Of course, that document has been subverted beyond all recognition. The other famous goddesses in America is shown as Justice, who is in reality the goddess Maat, M-A-A-T, holding the scales of Maat, divine justice and order. It is Maat who is shown in the Capitol building, guarding the Constitution. To the Egyptian mind, Maat bound all things together in an indestructible unity. The universe, the natural world, the state, and the individual were all seen as parts of the wider order generated by Maat. I need to cough. Hold on. Okay, hopefully we'll get through this, and I won't have to end it at the beginning of the next show. This means living in harmony with the cosmic order of the universe. Spiritual advancement of the individual being was crucial to the laws of Maat. The rituals of Freemasonry were designed to influence the body so that evolution may be quickened. Charles Ledbetter was the one who quoted that. And those have been Zionized, by the way, the rituals of Freemasonry. The most famed seal on the American dollar bill is based upon the original of the same seal drafted in the 18th century by the founders working in three committees of 13 men. It was Charles Thompson who submitted the final design. The famed pyramid on the seal has 13 levels or steps representing the 13 steps of the magnum opus with 72 granite stones, which represent the 72 steps of the Godhead. Manly P. Hall's The Secret Destiny of America has an interesting interpretation of the 72 stones in the pyramid of the Great Seal. He sees them corresponding to the 72 arrangements of the Tetragrammaton, or the four-letter name of God, Enki, not the masquerading Archon, Jehovah or Yahweh, which represents in turn the laws, powers, and energies of nature by which the perfection of man is achieved. And that was written by William Henry. Above this is the all-seeing eye, representing the all-knowing state, and that comes with completing the Godhead. Albert Pike writes about the keystone or capstone, which is in the symbol of the energies of Lucifer perfected in the perfection finished. This is the ancient symbol of the tension of soul on the enlightened human soul, the inner sun perfected. Our word for soul comes from sol, S-O-L, the Latin term for sun. I'm going to quote here. I have every hope that the grand work we have done today will be handed down to a late posterity as the like work of that ever memorial, memorable temple to our order erected by our ancient grandmaster Solomon. That was quoted by Maryland Grandmaster Joseph Clark, September 18, 1793, at the laying of the cornerstone of the Capitol. They were building the new Atlantis. The Talmudic Jews have stolen and corrupted this allegory into something horrid. On the symbolism on the rest of the dollar bill, we see an eagle, in reality a phoenix. Manless P. Hall states, the hand of the mysteries controlled in the establishment of the new government for the signature of the mysteries may still be seen on the Great Seal of the United States of America. Careful analysis of the seal discloses a mass of occult and Masonic symbols, chief among them the so-called American Eagle. The American Eagle upon the Great Seal is but a conventionalized phoenix. Not only were many of the founders of the United States government Masons, but they received aid from a secret and august body existing in Europe, which helped them to establish this country for a peculiar and particular purpose known only to the initiated few. And that was sources of Manly P. Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages. The original images of the seal from the time of 1776 to 1782 was the phoenix, not the eagle. The phoenix is an ancient symbol of alchemy, the death and rebirth of immortality thought the fires through the fires of the Kundalini serpent energy, basically apotheosis. With the eagle, it holds in one talon an olive branch with 13 leaves and the other 13 arrows. There are also 13 stripes on the shield and stripes representing the yin and the yang of the soul, which also are also depicted in the black and white checkerboard pattern on the Masonic floors, which are depicted. These stripes were also the sails of the Vikings, who were direct descendants of the Gaelic Scythians. And the name corresponds to Cidhe, a term used to describe and name the ancient Irish Fairies. We will discuss that one day. The Tiwa de Anu, or Tiwatha de Nan, I know I'm butchering that, or the tribe of Anu, as they were later called, a race of priest kings, or the Druids, the Nadrid princes. There are also 13 letters in E Pluribus Unum on the ribbon, and there are 13 stars in the larger star above the eagle's head, with the six-pointed star, which has 6 points, 6 angles, and 6 planes, which adds to the sum total of the sun square, or 666, the number of the sun, or the sun god, the alchemically perfected human, the gold and the work. There's also a small owl which appears just to the left of the one, which appears on the upper right-hand corner of the dollar bill. The owl is a symbol of Astaroth, Athena, and deals with the energies of the Kundalini serpent. The wise old owl can also see in the dark, and therefore more clearly. Now, where did the founders get Novus Ordo Seclorum from? Charles A. Tolton writes in his letter to the Secretary of Treasury, Charles J. Folger, on February 10, 1882, stating, "Novus Ordo Seclorum is a quotation from the fourth Eclogue and was borrowed in turn by Virgil from the mystic Sibylline records." Sibyl was an ancient Greek goddess. An ancient goddess. "A mighty order of ages is born anew. Both the prophetic Virgin and Saturnian kingdoms now return. Now a new progeny is let down from the lofty heavens. The boy soon to be born, in whom the Iron Age shall come to an end, and the Golden One shall arise in the whole earth." More into this passage, it reads, "Whatso tracks remain of our old wickedness, once done away, shall free the earth from the never-ceasing fear. He shall receive the life of gods and see heroes with gods commingling, and himself be seen of them, and with his father's worth reign over a world at peace. What are the founding fathers telling us in all of this? The founders, by their own admission and evidence, left us an important message in their symbols and buildings, that America was a new Atlantis in which humanity would break free of the spiritual slavery of the enemy and create a new order that would usher in the golden age of humanity, the age of Lucifer, when the great perfection would be finished and paradise would reign. They left the science of Enki's great working encoded in the Capitol building of the nation as a temple to him and the perfection of the human soul. The founders fought a revolution for this satanic spiritual evolution. The United States truly is the great Satan, not just in the manner as commonly described today due to the hijacking of our government, people, and this land's resources for nefarious purposes. We have to rid ourselves of this Talmudic political Zionist infestation operating out of the city of London and Tel Aviv, and its recently phony-imposed religious agendas that serve as mind control to convince us to serve the aims of world government and restore the original agenda of the great Western occultists, whose dreams were subverted almost immediately at the surrender of by General Cornwallis to George Washington. Book of Jubilees, it says, "I am the God who created heaven and earth. I shall increase you and multiply you exceedingly, and kings shall come from you and shall rule wherever the foot of the sons of man has trodden. I shall give to your seed all the earth which is under heaven, and they shall rule over all the nations according to their desire. And afterwards they shall draw the whole earth to themselves and shall inherit it forever. That's Book of Jubilees 32:18-19. And that's Book of Jubilees is a Jewish book. We have been in a struggle ever since, and the battle is only over if we let it be over. A new constitution is a must, and we must see clearly how the last one was subverted into simply a trial run for global government as a result of the war of northern aggression, or also known as the Civil War, where one side sought to preserve the original intent, the Confederacy, the other, the Union, bent on subverting it into what we have today. It was clearly a subverted experiment. In this modern world, one has to ask themselves, is it live or is it Memorex? It is clear that we are getting neither. To the ignorant and willfully stupid, they can't see it as an imposter masquerading as the original clearly with sinister intentions. To those of us who know what is going on, at best, we resemble an aborted fetus. Do you have eyes to see and ears to hear? Are ye not gods?
And tell her, Satan.
When the still sea conspires in armor, and her sullen and aborted currents breed tiny monsters, true sailing is dead. Awkward instant, and the first animal is